Now as our view glides over a body of waving water, a title appears. The water is wide.
Back in the days when I was young and a little too sure of myself, Yamacraw Island was a remote and isolated corner of America, forgotten by history, untouched by the hand of modern man.
You are listening to video description on the SAP channel. This service is primarily intended for viewers who are blind or visually impaired. To return to regular program audio, turn off the SAP feature on your TV or VCR. Now, children run alongside a river. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding from CBS, described by Stacy Perlman, Dutch Priest, and Carrie Canning, read by Steve Schatzberg. Now seagulls glide over a populated shoreline.
Across the water and a world away, the school board of Beaumont County, South Carolina, was in command of the island's education. It was here, on the mainland, that I first learned of Yamacraw and its children.
Now, a young man with shoulder-length hair drives an old Volkswagen Bug into a parking lot. He gets out of the yellow car and tucks his button-down into his khakis. He turns away empty-handed, then grabs a sport coat from the car and heads into a pillared building. Inside, an older man wearing a bow tie heads down a hall.
Fearless and capable, Dr. Henry Piedmont, the superintendent of schools in Beaumont County, was a Milltown kid who'd scratched his way to the top and never looked back. We first met in the summer of 1969.
In an office.
Although I'd graduated from a military academy, I'd elected to join the Peace Corps. But when that option suddenly fell through...
So you've turned to teaching.
Well, I'm already a teacher, sir.
Were a teacher. High school, 2 years, where you were relieved of your duties as a basketball coach.
Yeah, well, I guess I favored the better players, who happen to be black.
Piedmont holds up his palm to the applicant.
Son, they tell me I run the most democratic school system in the country.
The young man squints.
That little gesture he just made.
A Marine replaces Piedmont.
Kind of reminded you of me, didn't it, son?
The young man's eyes widen intensely. The officer slaps the desk.
How dare you use that tone with a superior officer? No wonder you're not a Marine. You don't have it in you. Turned out to be a nothing. A smart-mouthed nobody without a job.
Piedmont reappears.
Father was in the military, that right?
Yes, sir. United States Marine Corps, sir.
Then you are familiar with the concept, chain of command. Huh?
Yes, I am, sir.
The superintendent looks at golf trophies.
Mr. Conroy, do you know why you came here today?
Well, I want to teach you Yamacraw, sir.
Yamacraw. The A is soft.
Yamacraw.
In any event, that's not the reason. That's not the real reason. Would you care to know?
Conroy smiles.
Oh, you mean the real reason?
Divine guidance.
Divine guidance.
Mr. Conroy, you're too young and you're too naive to realize this now, but I believe that is the real reason you came to me today. You see, son, I've been praying for an answer to the problems that confront Yamacraw. It's worried me sick, boy. Where was I going to find somebody who was willing to live and work among those islanders? Somebody who could dedicate himself to the education of those beautiful, beautiful children?
Live among them, sir? I'm not sure.
I want you to go there. I want you to move around, have a look-see. And I want you to tell me what you think. Will you do that for me?
Piedmont squeezes Conroy's shoulder. Now the yellow bug arrives at a dock. A slender, grizzled man directs him to a parking spot.
My appointed navigator was Zeke Skimberry, a local fisherman who'd spent his life on the river. He could judge her moods and read her signs better than any man in the region.
Thanks for the ride, Mr. Skimberry. Pat Conroy.
Welcome.
A woman exits a drab dockhouse.
Ida, this here's Pat Conroy.
Hey, Luther, you got any 25s? And bring me a Spanish if you got it. Mr. Conroy.
Wait, Ida.
Zeke leads Conroy past a table of fish.
That's queen trigger. Ever seen one of them? Nope. Best eating fish in the sea.
Now a man in a white linen suit meets them.
For many years, Ezra Bennington had been in charge of the school district that included Yamacraw Island.
They board Zeke's boat.
Yeah. Thank you, Zeke. Well, Mr. Conroy, it is a great pleasure to meet you.
Well, it's good to meet you, sir.
And you, sir, are going to love Yamacraw.
I expect I will.
The boat pulls out.
When Bennington's domain was absorbed by Beaumont County, Piedmont had made him deputy superintendent, a lofty title for a position that amounted to little more than local errand boy.
The double-motored vessel heads away, churning up a wake of foamy water. A rim of flat land lies on the horizon. Later, Conroy and Bennington sit at the bow of the boat. The deputy superintendent points ahead.
There was a time when the Yamacraw oysters were world famous.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, you know, perils of modern age and, you know, most folks moving off and the ones left behind, well, they're just living off what the island provides.
Still kind of primitive then, huh?
Well, I helped put in electricity a few years back. Sake the children. Lord knows I worked to get those kids education. I love them as my own, actually. Am I right about that, Zeke?
Yes, sir, Mr. Bennington.
Zeke shifts his eyes toward Conroy. Under a wispy band of clouds, the silhouetted island sprawls on the horizon. Now, young black boys and girls halt in a coastal field of tall grass and look out to the river. The children point their fingers at the approaching boat as it steers toward the island. The children squint.
Possible preacher on the suckies.
Hello, preacher man. That's a new teacher.
A 12-year-old girl with braided pigtails smiles.
New teacher coming. We're gonna be late. I don't care about no teacher man.
As the boat draws closer, the children run off. The pigtail girl lingers and curiously watches Conroy pass. She walks away. Zeke pilots the boat up a channel flanked by the tall grass.
What if I commute, if I had my own boat?
No. You'd never be able to navigate these waters.
Oh, I'm sure I can learn.
No. Zeke's got the only boat comes out here. He's the only man that can get us through all of this stuff here.
How about the kids? Don't they ever get off the island?
Oh, yeah. They'll cross over to the mainland eventually. I mean, there's no work on Yamacraw. Mr. Conroy, Yamacraw is just one big old alligator. I've been wrestling with this for years and years and years. Mrs. Brown was the first decent teacher that I could get to live here full time.
Now, in a schoolhouse, a matronly black woman spanks a young boy's backside. The other children wince at each blow. The pigtailed girl shushes another.
Join the chain gang.
The teacher picks up a yardstick.
You all will pay attention and follow my instructions. Do you understand?
Yes, ma'am.
Now, at a dock on the island, a man ties a rowboat to a post as another man offshore tosses a fishing net into the river. Zeke's boat approaches. A man in a vest and a red cap waits for them on the dock.
The only white folks on the island were Ted Stone and his wife. Somehow, being a decorated veteran of World War II, qualified Ted to be chief of police, fire marshal, and game warden.
Bennington smiles at Ted.
Ted, this is Pat Conroy. Come look at our school.
Mr. Stone?
Ted averts a snooty gaze.
He also delivered the mail for his wife, Lou, the official postmistress, who was a mechanic at heart and drove the Yamacraw school bus.
Lou.
A blonde woman looks up from an engine.
Pat Conroy here.
Morning, ma'am. I understand y'all folks know around here.
That a fact.
She blows her nose into a dirty rag. Conroy smiles, nods, and joins Ted and Bennington in a red Jeep. A sign in the windshield reads, U.S. Mail.
Y'all live here long, Mr. Stone?
Long enough.
Ted speeds ahead. Further inland, a man leads a team of oxen down a gravel road. As the Jeep swerves sharply around them, Bennington holds onto his hat. Conroy looks back at the animals. At the wheel, Ted spits over his shoulder.
Hey there. Hi, y'all.
Bennington waves to a group of women wearing bandanas. Conroy observes another lady pulling a cart. Now the Jeep turns past a signpost. One arrowed plank reads beach, another reads school.
Show me the flower.
In the schoolhouse.
Maybe that's a rabbit. Show me the flower.
A girl with barrettes points in a book. Mrs. Brown peers out a window and sees the arriving Jeep. She faces her class.
Y'all sit up straight. Maggie Manners!
Yes, ma'am.
She sets down a yardstick.
Don't act your color.
Outside, Mrs. Brown exits the front door of the schoolhouse. The children inside rush to the window.
Oh. So I'm driving, Ted.
caught you here, didn't I?
Yeah, barely.
Mr. Bennington, what an honor it is to have you visit with us, sir. Could this possibly be our new addition?
Well, if he accepts our offer, which I am certain that he will once he gets to know you, Mrs. Brown. Mr. Conroy?
Welcome overseas, Mr. Conroy.
Thank you very much. And you can just call me Pat.
The children scurry away from the window.
Things are rough overseas, Mr. Conroy. Missionary work is what it is. Mr. Bennington is the only one who understands.
Tell you.
Inside, the children sit with their hands folded.
Children, say good morning to Mr. Bennington.
Good morning, Mr. Bennington.
And to Mr. Conroy.
Good morning, Mr. Conroy.
Roy.
Roy.
You know, I used to go to school just like this one. That's the truth. Yeah, one room. Pot belly in the corner right over there. And look where I got, huh? Now, you itty bits. Now, you listen hard to Mrs. Brown and hopefully Mr. Conroy. And you work even harder, huh? Well, you're all going to get to be big and important, just like me.
Conroy raises his brow.
Are you all going to do that?
They look to Mrs. Brown, who nods.
Yes, sir.
The students face forward. As one boy whips around, Conroy notices two leather straps on Mrs. Brown's desk.
I knew you could bring the little ones up.
I try, Mr. Bennington. I do try.
The pigtailed girl gazes at Conroy. Now, on the mainland, Conroy parks outside a white house.
Barbara and I met 6 months after her husband died. She believed in a contented home, a happy family, admired order, and used a napkin.
He picks up the girl.
I used the back of my hand and thrived on chaos. But we fell in love anyway and planned to be married later that fall.
Conroy shoots a basketball.
So, did you get it?
Get what?
Don't be a dork, Conroy.
Yeah, quit being a dork.
You quit being a dork, huh? Huh?
Barbara grins.
Well, you're looking at the number two educator at Yamacor Island.
Way to go, Conroy. Very cool.
He spins around. Later inside...
Night-night, sweetie pie.
As Barbara writes in the kitchen, Conroy enters.
I got a split.
He grabs his coat and leans close.
What? Fifth grade lesson plan?
It's just as hard as high school, maybe harder. You'll see.
Are you trying to tell me I can't get by my winning Conroy charm?
I just don't understand why you can't commute. It's not that far across the river.
Well, they want me to be sort of a presence. Anyway, they tell me there's no boat.
Barbara hides a book behind
her
back.
Wait. Do they know you're getting married in 2 months? What about after that? That's crazy. Seriously.
Hey, tell me about it. I know.
And in case you don't remember, there's a little girl up there that still calls you that man. She needs her daddy. He's going to be you, by the way.
I know. I'll get on her case. Had to get the job first, right?
Uh-huh.
He kisses her cheek.
Hang on. One teacher to another.
She hands him a book, How to Teach Primary School.
I love you.
Really? You should check it out. Mm-hmm. Check it out. It saved me more than once. I mean, I'm not kidding.
As he smooches her neck, Barbara hugs him tightly and kisses his lips. Now, as the sun rests at the horizon, the yellow bug pulls up to the dock. Wearing fingerless gloves and a black cap, Zeke steps out of the dock house with a cup in hand. He walks over to Conroy's car.
Here, let me help you.
He lifts a duffel. Conroy follows with records and a player.
Hey, good luck to you, Mr. Conroy.
Thanks, Mrs. Skimbrick.
Hey, it's Ida.
Thanks, Ida.
She hands him a mug. Now, standing behind Zeke's wheelhouse, Conroy rides in the boat towards Yamacraw Island. Orange hues spread into the sky. Our view drifts over the calm water. Conroy takes a deep breath and turns to Zeke.
Ever see any boats for sale around Bluffton?
Now and then.
Just need a little one.
How little?
Enough to get me Yamacraw back?
Mr. Bennington says...
Let's forget what Mr. Bennington says. I need my own boat.
Now, on Yamacraw, a boy leads a cow down a road. Ted's Jeep heads toward them. The boy guides the animal to the side. Now Ted stops at the school and stares at Conroy.
Thanks, Mr. Stone. Appreciate it.
As Ted fixes his hat, the teacher removes his albums and record player from the back. Ted watches Conroy.
You know, a lot of gals ain't got hair as long as you.
As Conroy gets his duffel, Ted's Jeep speeds away, nearly taking the bag with it. Later inside.
Have you ever taught colored children before, Miss Conroy?
Well, for 2 years,
elementary level.
No, I haven't.
You're going to have the older grades, 5 through 8. Now, treat them stern, be tough, keep them hard at the work, or they'll run you right out the door.
Brown,
be in here.
She leads him into a narrow, windowed room. Conroy looks around the small space.
This is great.
He tosses his bag on a bed. Later, a school bus arrives. At the wheel, Lou opens the door. The boys and girls run past a corroded basketball hoop into the school.
I know colored people better than you do. Thank you to monitor that door, Ethel. I am one myself, in case you hadn't noticed. That is why I know you have to step on them. Step on them every day and keep stepping on them. If you have any trouble, Professor Madison is right next door.
Conroy knits his brow.
In your seats, eyes ahead, hold your mouth.
Now in his own classroom, Conroy writes his name on a chalkboard. While one student spins a basketball on his finger, the others chat. Three boys fuss for control of the ball.
Let me know. Get here.
All right. Break it up. Settle down, everybody.
Good morning, my young geniuses of Yamacraw. Are you all ready to learn today?
They stare at him.
Well, you're gonna be. And you know what we're gonna start with? We're gonna start with my name, Mr. Conroy. Can you say it? Let's hear it. We'll break it up in two parts. Mr. Conroy.
Mr. Conroy.
Most of them have slow brains.
As Mrs. Brown enters with her yardstick, the students straighten.
But you all can learn if you work. If you stop being such lazy, lazy people. Now, I know some of you in here were born simple-minded. You know who you are. And we know that you can't help being that way. That just means you got to work even harder than your lazy, lazy friends. Simple-minded people have to be pushed and whipped harder than anybody.
Conroy sternly folds his arms. His image fades into the river's serene surface. In his classroom.
Everybody start shaking. Everybody shake loose, huh? Fingertips down to your toes. Shake your hips. Everything. We're going to dust the cobwebs off those smart little brains. Okay. Have a seat.
They sit down.
Very good. Don't y'all feel awake now?
No.
All right, you see those papers and pencils in front of you there? I want to know everything about y'all. I want to know what you like and what you don't like and what makes you tick.
Tick.
No, trust me now. Okay, so for the next 20 minutes, I want you to write down everything about yourselves. Okay? Ready, set, go.
The children look at their new teacher blankly.
Seriously, grab your pencils. Grab your pencils. Everybody, grab your pencils. Everybody. And just start writing down everything, all about yourselves. Don't sweat the grammar, the spelling, any of that nonsense. Just get to writing. Write it down. Everything. Don't worry about a thing.
One student grips his pencil in his fist and touches it to the paper. Others, who hold their pencils correctly, make no movements or write slowly. Conroy walks around and checks their progress. As one boy scribbles, the teacher lightly taps his desk. The student beside him moves his fist-held pencil in random strokes. On the desks, the papers contain doodles and scattered letters. While one child fills in a circle, another draws a stick figure. Conroy lifts his head and takes a breath. His concerned expression dissolves to the water. Later, in the classroom.
What's your name, son?
Prophet.
He grins.
Ethel.
The pigtailed girl.
Charles.
I'm cool like ice.
Mary.
Oscar, sir.
Cindy Lou.
Now a boy taps on his desk.
Frank.
Lincoln.
Lincoln. What country do we live in?
He looks around.
What's the name of this grand old red, white, and blue nation of ours, huh? Land of the free, home of the brave, place you all were born?
They lower their eyes.
Come on, gang. Somebody must know what country we live in. America? America? Does that ring a bell?
No.
No? No one here has ever heard of the United States of America?
Oh, yeah.
Ethel replies.
I hit it and I pledge allegiance.
Yes, pledge of allegiance. Very good, Ethel.
Thank you, sir.
Conroy notices a boy writing with his head down.
Excuse me. Young man?
Yes, sir.
What's your name?
Saul, sir.
Saul, do you know who the first president of the United States was?
George Washington.
Right on, Saul. It's very good. Just imagine how well you'd do if you paid a little more attention in here. Okay. Hey, now that we're on a roll, everybody, I want someone to tell me the name of that big old ocean that washes up on the far side of Yamacraw. That big old body of water.
Body? I ain't seen nobody. Nobody ain't seen nobody. That's what the teacher...
Very good, Charles. Thank you. No, but what I mean is, the body of water.
Oscar and Cindy Lou stare.
No. Okay. Now, this is the mainland right here.
Conroy draws on a chalkboard.
And you all live on an island. You know that, right? You know that you live on an island?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Now, this is the mainland. This is the island. This here is the river. Now, it's pretty wide, but you can still see the land on the other side. And then all of this over here is what you call an ocean. Because it's so big that you can't see any land on the other side. And the name of this ocean is the Atlantic. A-T-L-A-N-T-I-C. Atlantic. So, for $64 million, who can tell me the name of that big old body of water that washes up on the far side of Yamacraw?
Atlantic.
All right, Atlantic. Now everybody.
Atlantic.
Very good.
Now, outside, Conroy's white canvas sneakers jog down a road. Wearing sweatpants and a raglan t-shirt, he runs among the grassy dunes toward the beach. As sunlight glistens on the ocean, the teacher runs onto the sand, slows down, and turns around. He paces backward toward the water, then resumes his run. Now, Ted's Jeep zips past Conroy on another road. Pumping his arms, the jogger continues on the gravel, then hustles up an embankment. Above the short slope, two of his students run in front of a weather-beaten house. As the children pass a woman hoeing a garden, a third boy sits alone in the grass.
Hey, kid.
Ethel stops and looks. The woman in the garden points. Ethel runs to the seated boy and grabs his arm. She grins at Conroy, who waves. As the children head to the house, the woman in the garden eyes Conroy sharply, then walks away. The young teacher squints thoughtfully toward the family. Now Conroy uses puppets.
My pre-Yamacraw theory of teaching was pretty basic. I figured a good teacher had to show a bit of insanity, or at least look as if he was out of control, if he wanted to catch and hold the attention of his students.
I'm George Washington, and I'm the leader of the Continental Army, and I'm gonna whoop you.
Well, you people can't beat the British Army. It's the greatest army in the whole world.
Oh, yeah?
He bangs one puppet with the other.
That's cheating. I wasn't ready.
Welcome to America, Mr. King.
The students watch, unamused. Conroy peeks his head up and eyes their faces. Now outside.
So this is a set shot, okay? You want to have your knees bent, and when you get your arm up, you want this to make an L, all right? And you go up.
He shoots a ball.
And you make it.
Lincoln gets the ball.
All right, Lincoln, bring it back here. All right. Now you guys all get a turn, all right? But Lincoln, you go first.
As Conroy hands him the basketball, the boys spread out. Prophet bounces the ball off his head, and Charles kicks it back to him. As they play, Conroy backs up. Charles grabs Lincoln, who drops the ball. Conroy sits on the front steps and watches. Catching the ball, Prophet springs it off his knee. One of the other boys shoots and scores. Conroy observes intently and smiles. Behind him, Mrs. Brown watches the children through the windowed door. As she steps outside, Conroy turns. Mrs. Brown wipes her hands and rests a hand on her hip.
What is that they're speaking?
Oh, awful gibberish, isn't it? Lord knows I have tried to beat it out of them.
What I mean is, what language is it?
Call it dialect.
goes all the way back to the slavery days. Left over from Africa.
Conroy shifts his eyes pensively. As Mrs. Brown rings the bell, the children run over.
Go first. You stand up. You and I are outsiders on Yamacroft. You better get used to it. Come on.
As she follows the students inside, Conroy tosses the basketball toward the hoop and enters. Now, wearing his canvas running shoes and sweatpants, the teacher jogs up to Ethel and Saul's house.
Hi there.
He approaches the older lady, busy at her garden.
What you want?
I thought I'd introduce myself.
I know who you is, teacher man.
My name's Conroy. Pat Conroy.
No matter what your name, what you teach, that what matter. You do right with my grands, or I'm going to have to get old Betsy out of the house and drop you down.
Well, that's why I'm here, ma'am. I'm going to do my best.
Will you come? They send old Miss Glover out to pasture. For 40 years, that's all she say. Do my best. She never teach nobody around here nothing. Yes, sir. No, sir.
Well, I'm going to change all that, ma'am. But I can't do it alone. Need some support. I want to get the parents involved.
She enters the house and closes the door. Growing pensive, the young teacher jogs away from the house. Now in the school, a record spins on a player. Conroy lies on his bed.
Finally, I started to get the picture. I was a foreigner in Yamacraw the same way the children were foreigners in America. The parents knew firsthand that sitting in that schoolhouse led nowhere. And they'd passed their failed dreams along to their kids.
He sits up and stuffs a shirt into his duffel. Grinning, Conroy picks up the How to Teach Primary School book. He flips through the pages and stops on one. It reads, Chapter 2, Getting to Know You. Telling stories to children. Making one's own stories. When children are creative. At school.
That's right. We'll just slide them into like a little semi-circle. Okay. All right, gang.
The students move their desks close together.
All right, gang. Have a seat. Have a seat. Okay. What I figure is if we're going to spend a whole year together, we better get to know each other. So we're going to spend the day today, the entire day, just talking.
About what are we talking to?
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Well, we're going to talk about what you like. What you don't like, what turns you crank, you know, anything that you want, really.
So, we don't know about no crank.
Yeah.
No. What I mean is, you know what, how about we just start?
Okay.
I guess I'll go first, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was born poor, white, and ugly.
You got that right.
But see, I've grown up. I'm still poor. I'm still white.
You still ugly.
So let's see. I've got four brothers.
I told
brothers,
them about my mother and how she loved books. Now my father flew jets. And my four brothers and two sisters. About how much I loved basketball. And that I was getting married to Barbara, who had a daughter named Jenny. And how her husband died, and all about our little yellow car that looked like a bug and was made in a country called Germany on the other side of the...
Atlantic!
Good.
Then Cindy Lou told me all about scrinch and squirrels.
You just stuck you right on the stuck and then pum over the hot fire and then the fur. All of a sudden he scrunch right up and then you just brush it off, else if you just want fry, you just slip the belly and then peels the skin back so he all smooth. Just like a grape.
Yuck!
Oh, he's so good.
Man, you never
Charles takes a turn.
Hey, teacher man. Mr. Conroy, you ever seen a snake milk a cow?
No, that's bull.
Snake can't milk no bull, man.
Well, can't milk no cow, neither.
I seen it.
Me too. It wicked.
Has anybody else in here witnessed this bovine phenomenon?
I seen it.
Many of the kids raise their hands.
One time, I seen one so big, he milk a cow dry.
Yep, right.
You swear? Right.
Yes, ma'am.
Ethel, come on. What's the truth?
She eyes her fellow classmates.
Yes, sir, Mr. Conroy. It's true, all right. I seen plenty of snake milk cows.
Mm-hmm. And do they take that milk and put it in bottles and then sell it at the store?
Aw, oh, man. No, they suck it right up.
Mrs. Brown looks in and taps on the door window. The children sit up.
Oh, man, here comes the news.
Mrs. Brown gestures for Conroy to join her. Now he enters a kitchen with a smile.
Have you heard this story about the snake?
You are going to lose the respect of those children.
She stands over two open boxes.
I don't...
Your approach.
Can't they have a little fun, too?
I have already told you about colored children. They need whipping. They understand whipping. Believe me.
Well, ma'am, I can understand your point of view.
Okay, that's good. These are your textbooks.
Textbooks? No.
The state requires the students to read these books.
He shakes his head.
Mrs. Brown, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but those kids don't know what country that they live in. They can't recite the alphabet. They can't spell their own name. They can't add two and two, and you expect
them
to read from this book?
That's beside the point. The state requires them to read the books.
Mrs. Brown, what if they can't?
She turns around.
Mr. Conroy, your job is to make them.
He examines one of the books questioningly. Now, as he jogs down a road, sweaty strands of hair stick to his forehead. The teacher heads past two women and stops in front of the rustic signpost. Conroy reads the signs and turns down the path to the beach. With a heavy breath, he pauses and shifts his eyes. He heads back to the signpost and eyes a lower plank. It reads, Library, and points in the opposite direction. Conroy jogs that way. Now, a woman shovels oyster shells over a plate on a brick fireplace. Other residents gather in the smoky area. Conroy looks around at the islanders and walks around a large ranch-style building. The teacher climbs a set of stairs to a porch. A hanging sign reads, United States Post Office. Conroy approaches the only teller window.
Excuse me, Miss Stump. Hi. There's a sign up the road that says there a library is this way.
I know. Okay.
Oh, but there is one.
Of course.
Well, could you tell me the hours and then maybe I'll come...
You want a book?
No, I just want...
Libraries are for books. Now, you want a book, I'll open it up. You want to just look, I ain't got time.
Oh, so you mean that you're the...
Lou gives him the eye and Conroy swallows. Lou puts a hand on her hip, then walks over to a door and opens it. Conroy enters and finds several shelves of books. Lou folds her arms. The teacher crouches at one shelf. He pulls out a book about World War II.
Ted really hates Nazis. You get tax money back for giving away things to education. So I got Ted to donate his entire collection. Not that any of them youngins ever come in here and raid them.
You know, I don't think those kids know too much about war.
Well, I say a book's a book.
As Conroy looks through the collection, Lou stares at him.
How are you getting along with Miss Brown?
Okay. Not bad.
Ask me. That woman's a savior. At least she teaches them ragamuffins some manners. How to show respect.
Conroy closes a book and looks around.
She does that all right.
He spots a cabinet.
Oh, honey, them doors ain't been open in I don't know how long.
Conroy finds projectors and an amp.
Oh, whoa. What is all this?
Come last year from the state. I was going to send it all back, but it was free.
Well, thanks to you, Yamacraw Island has just entered the audiovisual age.
At school.
And everybody knows who this is, right? Saul, we talked about him.
Who that be?
He was the head of the Continental Army.
Who is that?
George Washington. George Washington.
Conroy projects slides.
By looking at her crown, you can tell she's a royalty.
Who is she?
That's Queen Elizabeth. Have you ever heard of Napoleon? Desi Arnaz, Lucille Ball? This is our 16th president.
We talked about this man just recently.
He's our president right now, 1969.
Who's that?
Richard Nixon.
Another shows a black athlete.
All right. Greatest baseball player in the major leagues. Center fielder for the Giants. No one?
The teacher frowns.
That was Willie Mays.
Now, outside, Mrs. Brown rings the bell. As the boys and girls head inside, the teacher notices Conroy sitting on a nearby tree branch, his back to the school.
Slow.
Mrs. Brown eyes him with a concerned gaze. Conroy stares off distantly. Inside his classroom, the boys inspect the back of the amplifier.
What's in front? Right here. Another one, right there.
They plug in a microphone and hit a switch.
What?
Charles holds the mic. Outside, Conroy lifts his head. Outside, Conroy smiles. He gets up and runs to the school.
I'm a soul man.
Conroy intercepts Mrs. Brown in the hall.
Miss Brown, let me handle this one.
Why should I?
Well, because you know what? Because
why should I, Conroy?
Because you are right. You are so incredibly, absolutely right. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to take charge of these kids. I'm going to kick a few rear ends. I'm going to show them who's boss. I'm going to take charge.
She slaps a leather strap in her hand and returns to her class. Conroy joins his students.
I'm a soul man.
Charles.
The boy drops the mic.
What is that? What are you doing there?
Soul, sir.
Is that what you call that? You call that soul?
Yes, sir.
Well, I gotta tell you, Charles, you're one groovy dude.
What's that, groovy?
Groovy? Well, that means you're cool, man.
Cool, Charles.
Yeah, what do you think? Oh. Man, Charles, can you call?
Conroy lifts the microphone.
Who else wants to give it a shot?
With a wide grin, Ethel steps up.
To trust in Jesus, just to take him at his word, just to rest upon his promise, and to know the saith the Lord.
She passes the mic to Oscar. Frank drums with pencils.
All the rest of that day, the children, whose physical lives were ruled by a river, showed me how their imaginations knew no bounds.
Oscar throws his arm around Frank. Later, outside, the children board the school bus. Lou pulls away from the schoolhouse. Inside, Conroy walks down the hallway to the kitchen. Mrs. Brown removes a pie from the oven.
Ooh, fresh baked pie.
He sniffs.
Excuse me?
She wraps the pie and carries it away.
Well, saying and carrying on like that is a waste of time. If you do not follow the curriculum, I'm going to have to report you.
Report me?
As principal of the school, the proper education of these children is my responsibility.
Oh, well, that's a relief. I thought I was going to have to do it.
Do what?
To report that somehow the educational process here, that most kids in this school, by the time they get to the senior grades, are completely illiterate.
That's not my doing.
Is Piedmont now?
I expect so. But then it is not your job to tell him.
And why is that?
She walks outside.
Chain of command.
Chain of command?
That's the rule.
Oh, yeah. The rule. I gotta tell you, Mrs. Brown, me and rules, we don't get along too well.
She turns around.
Miss Conroy, rules and I.
She nods her head and walks off with the pie. Conroy grins.
Rules and I knew that.
He closes the schoolhouse door. Now, on the mainland, Conroy drives up to a stately brick building and steers the bug around a circular driveway. Two blonde women and a man in a golf cap watch the smoke-belching VW pass their shiny red convertible. Conroy parks, and a white-haired man glares at him. Now, on a golf course, a player taps a ball into a hole. Conroy approaches in jeans.
Piedmont. Hold on.
Costa. You can't be trespassing. Do you know this man, Dr. Piedmont?
Mr. Conroy. Pleasure.
We'll sort of bother you on Saturday.
Sam, don't mind them. They're kind of fussy about the protocol and the dress code around here.
So tell me about Yamacraw. Things going all right?
No, sir. It's not all right at all. I think it's something I want to tell you about now.
I'm all ears, boy.
While at Columbia University, Piedmont had studied books on administrative procedure. Every thesis he read stressed how the successful superintendent demanded strict adherence to the...
Chain of command, boy. You told me you understood the concept.
I do, sir. I do. But I thought that you'd want to know about that.
You know, you were a godsend to me.
Yeah, you mentioned
day and night, I prayed for an answer to the conundrum of Yamacraw, and then you come here to my doorway out of the blue, a miracle.
Yeah, sir, but now that I've been there...
Yeah, now that you've been there, you won't let me down.
No, that's not it at all.
It's none of my business, and maybe this is a matter between you and your conscience, but I do not understand how you can disappoint those little children.
No, now, listen to me, boy. It's a gift to listen.
Don't you know you're their salvation? You're their hope. And I want to tell you something else, though. I believe you're too young and you're too naive to understand this. But from the bottom of my heart, I know that Yamacraw is your divine calling.
Conroy shifts his eyes.
You stay strong, boy. Stay strong.
Piedmont passes a sign reading, members only, dress code required, no blue jeans. The young teacher furrows his brow and lowers his head.
The Water is Wide will resume after these messages from Hallmark.
So how's work?
It's okay.
What about Jeff?
He's great. Anything serious? We've been going out for a while. Mom, it's only been 3 months.
He just seems like he's really good to you.
Yeah!
Baseball. I think he likes it because he used to watch it with your granddad. You know, that was from the both of us.
Yeah, right.
Your father helped pick it up.
Mom.
Well, you know your father. He might not always show you, but he's...
proud of me and loves me very much.
I know.
The years flew by, and before we knew it...
And before we knew it, we were all grown up. What a wonderful woman you become. Happy birthday. So, how's what's his name?
Please report to the principal's office. Laura Davis, please report to the principal's office.
Come in, Laura. Close the door and sit down. Be with you in a minute.
Look, Miss Reed, I didn't do nothing.
Anything, Laura.
Whatever. I didn't do it. I've been playing it straight since the last time I got in trouble, I swear.
Laura.
I haven't been ditching class. I'm not hanging out with those guys no more. I even went to see that council lady you told me about.
I know. The only reason I asked you to come down here is because yesterday
I had to watch my sister while my grandma went to the doctor, and I already told Mr. Ball, and I already gave him a note, and now he's getting me all in trouble with you again. See, even when I try to do right by you, it all gets messed up.
Nothing is messed up, Laura. The reason I asked you to come down here is... here.
This is it?
Mm-hmm.
You're proud of me?
Yeah. Now you better get back to class. And close the door, Laura.
Now, back to tonight's presentation of the Hallmark Hall of Fame.
Now, our view drifts over the wavering river. Riding on Zeke's boat, Conroy stares at the water. Zeke turns to him.
Take the wheel. Huh? You can't take your own boat out here if you don't know the water.
The teacher's face brightens.
Really?
As Zeke nods, Conroy steps into the wheelhouse and takes up the pilot's position.
Over due east.
More than simply pointing out the underwater hazards, Zeke guided my path toward an awareness of the ebb and flow of the tides. Then he directed my attention to the coming of the sun as it awakened the horizon with the vibrant color that inspired poets and foretold the weather.
Now at school, Conroy's class listens to a record. As Prophet waves his finger through the air, the teacher passes behind his students. Saul rests his head on his desk. Beside him, Lincoln focuses on the record player intently. While Charles taps on his shoe, Oscar smiles. Conroy warmly observes his students. Staring off distantly, Saul flicks his fingers and keeps his head down. The teacher watches him closely. Now, Conroy shows them a record sleeve.
That tune came from the 50 greatest all-time classical hits.
Huh? You're excited, I can see that. Okay, now this
next number
is going to be by this long-haired cat named Beethoven. Okay, and what's his name?
Beethoven, you got it. All right, good, that's right. Now, this guy wrote some pretty heavy tunes. He came from Germany. This is Germany. It's on the continent of Europe. And what's the name of that continent?
Europe.
All right. You guys are hip. You're getting it. Okay, now this song by Beethoven was one of his most famous songs. It's all about how death was this ghost and it was coming to his house and started knocking on his door. Now, Beethoven, he got to thinking, if something this heavy was going to come and knock on his door, it might sound like dun, 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 dun. Okay, everybody.
Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun. Okay. Is everybody ready? Want to hear Death Ghost?
Yeah!
I'm ready for that ghost.
You hear him knocking?
As the others interact, Saul gazes glumly at Conroy.
It's sharp. It's sharp. All right, how about this one? Take a listen to this.
Conroy sits in front of his students and rocks a small Beethoven bust in his arms like a baby.
No, but if you listen, this song is like what a mama might sing when she wants her baby to go to sleep.
Saul watches Conroy and flashes a polite smile.
Do y'all want to know a secret?
The teacher turns off the player. As the students crowd in close, Conroy licks his lips.
You guys learn as good and as fast as anyone I've known my whole life.
Really smart.
You are smart. You know what? From now on, you guys are going to become the most advanced scholars on classical music out of any school in all of Beaumont County. How does that sound? Is that right? That's right. And we're going to test those brains right now. We're going to test. All right, your first test.
Mrs. Brown stops in the hallway.
Very good, you guys. That's good.
Now, at a flower market.
I can't believe this. Just a while ago, it was way off, and now it's 2 weeks away. 13 days. It's amazing. Hey, what do you think? Too fussy?
Conroy carries Jenny.
Maybe not orchids. Hello? Anyone home?
I'm sorry, babe. I gotta get these kids off the island, break the cycle. Here you go, sweetie.
He puts Jenny down.
You know, I gotta connect them to the world. Otherwise, they're gonna get eaten alive by people even less enlightened than Piedmont and Bennington.
But you can't because...
Because the number one educator, Hammercraw, she's a case.
Well, maybe the old Conroy style isn't the best approach.
This woman, she is so...
Scared is what she is. Professional black woman trying to make it in the white male South. And then you come in, Mr. Loose Cannon, with your big plans and your big attitude.
Attitude? Maybe.
Yeah, you, Conroy. And just be the you I fell in love with. And you'll be fine.
Later.
All right, gang. I'm going to tell you about my great-great-granddaddy, El Ferdinand de Burrito El Castillo Conroy. Now, see, he's a world-famous explorer because he's the first man to swim from Spain all the way to North America. No. And from that day forward, they called this the Conroy Ocean.
You lie, teacher man.
Well, how do you know?
Because there ain't no Conroy Ocean.
You said it called that.
Mr. Conroy, look on his light.
Oh, Buster. You're right. But see, now you know that you don't have to believe something just because I say it's true. See, we live in a free country. And what that means is we're free to disagree with what anyone says, even the teacher.
Prophet grabs a ball from Oscar.
Prophet. Oscar, hey, just leave it on the floor, okay?
As Saul stares intently at his teacher, Conroy's expression softens.
You see, there was a great American, and his name was Ralph Waldo Emerson. And he believed we must always question rules and laws and not believe a thing's true just because the big cheese say so.
Ethel's lips curl into a smile.
All right, you know what? Y'all look a little tired. So let's take a nap. Everybody put your head down, close your eyes, take a little nap. And when I count to three, I want all of you to pop up, open your eyes, and be wide awake, okay?
They put their heads down.
One, two, three.
As the others spring up, Saul stays down. Conroy taps the boy's hand, and he looks up. The teacher puts down a globe, and Saul looks around at his fellow students. He focuses back on his teacher.
You don't always hear what I'm saying, do you, Saul?
Saul shakes his head.
Okay, hey. All right, guys, break it up.
Conroy mouths, "How old are you?"
12.
Hey, gang, Saul reads lips. You're reading my lips right now without even thinking about it. So from now on, when you guys talk to Saul, I want you to face him. I want you to articulate your words. That way he can see the shape of your mouth, and then he can understand. All right, are y'all going to do that for me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, turn around. All right, everybody. Tell Saul you're going to help him out.
Yeah!
I'm sorry.
I'll help you, Saul.
You are listening to video description on the SAP channel. To return to regular program audio, turn off the SAP feature on your TV or VCR. Now, sitting outside her house, Ethel and Saul's grandmother reads the Bible. As Ted's Jeep speeds by, Conroy approaches her.
What you got? I don't want none of it.
I come about Saul.
Saul?
She removes her glasses.
My little grand, he in trouble?
Far from it, Mrs. Graves. He's the brightest student in class.
Shh. Shh. Shh.
Her dog lowers its head.
So what you saying?
I'm saying he's almost deaf. He's been keeping it a secret.
Been that way since he was born.
The grandmother shifts in her seat.
Well, the other children, they won't be teasing him anymore.
She lifts her brow.
Just thought you want to know. So long.
He gives her a smile and walks away. The grandmother knits her brow and shifts her eyes pensively. Now, outside the school, the children rest in and around a thick, sprawling tree.
Hey, gang, hey. I bet you didn't know it, but this old oak... This is the original tree of knowledge. It is. It is. This tree knows everything, and I can prove it. You see, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you some hard questions, and you won't be able to get any of the answers right.
Oh, man.
But this old tree, it's going to help you. It's going to whisper that knowledge into your ears. This tree is so smart, the knowledge oozes out of the branches. Y'all ready?
No.
Oh, come on. What's the longest stinking river in the whole wild world?
Now.
Good. And what continent is it in?
In Africa.
Uh-huh. Do I come from Africa?
No, you from Ireland.
Well, Ireland is a country in Africa.
Mrs. Brown approaches.
What is the largest desert in the world?
Sahara.
Mr. Conroy.
Oh, man, here come the news. The school is here for education, not for all-day recess. The state says if you are on school property, you have to abide by the rules. Y'all get your little narrow hinies out of the tree.
Hold on, hold on. We're still in class.
Class won't get us in trouble.
Conroy licks his lips.
Miss Brown, you're right. Heck, the whole state's right. Now, hold on. But there's one thing we can do.
He turns to his class.
Y'all ever hear of a field trip?
Yeah.
You want to take one?
Yeah!
All right, let's go have one. Come on.
Yeah! Wait a minute. Wait. Sit back.
Now Conroy jogs backwards, leading the kids.
Conroy!
What's the nearest star?
The sun!
So, watch my lips. What's the closest planet to the sun?
Mercury!
What's the biggest country in the world?
China!
I live in China!
No!
Who saw the death coach?
They love it!
Now they run onto the beach. Pumping their arms, the children keep up with their teacher. Beside them, pink and purple tinted clouds hover over the calm ocean. Now, Conroy waves to someone and crosses through a yard of tall grass. He heads to a small house with flowers lining the windowsills.
Mrs. Brown had been educated in a private school, where she learned the importance of what she called the fundamentals of refinement.
Mr. Conroy.
Hello, Mrs. Brown.
She eyes him through a screened porch and opens a door.
I sure do appreciate this invitation.
We'll see about that.
Inside, she pours tea into a dainty china cup.
I believe in education. Without it, these children haven't a chance.
Exactly. That's exactly my position. I just don't think that harsh discipline is the answer.
You cannot control those children without a strap.
Well, you see, I think that...
Yes, I do see, Mr. Conroy, I do.
Well, then you must also see how important it is that these children get off the island. And I got a great idea how to
do it. Well, whatever it is, I cannot allow it. They need fundamentals, not field trips. Why can't you understand that?
They also need to see how the world works.
She arrests a cordial nod and eyeballs him sternly. Conroy glances at his plate.
This is good pie, by the way.
Miss Conroy, you were not hired to show them how the world works. Excuse me for being blunt. I am not at all sure you know how it works.
All her refinement couldn't hide the fact that she was obstinate and immovable.
Now, on the mainland dock, Zeke shows Conroy a boat.
Might take me a couple of days to get her fixed up.
Conroy eyes the old motorboat.
You know, Zeke, this is
all yours.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Conroy throws his arm around Zeke.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now at Barbara's, he picks up Jenny.
Okay, let's have it. What's going on?
What do you mean, what's going on? What do you think, Pipsqueak? You think something's going on?
Mom, is he being a dork?
They enter the kitchen.
Well, I got some good news and some very interesting news.
Good first.
Zeke loaned me a boat.
Okay, good so far.
And the really, really interesting news is that I invited 12 Yamacraw kids to the wedding.
Barbara's freckled cheeks crease as she grins.
I gotta say, Conroy, you're starting to grow on me.
She gives him a tender kiss, and they share a warm smile. Now, as the sun rises, Conroy steers his motorboat toward Yamacraw. Behind him, golden light creeps above the silhouetted land and melts into the pale sky. Turning to his side, he looks at the smooth, reflective water, then focuses ahead. With a raised brow, the teacher holds his lips curled in a placid smile. Now at the schoolhouse.
Ain't going.
What do you mean?
Not going no place. Staying.
Our grandma just laughed.
She laughed?
She laughed real hard. She think you joking us.
So nobody got permission?
No, sir. Our grandma said no way.
Wanna come but can't.
Yeah.
No means no.
Conroy eyes four of his students somberly. Now with Ethel and Saul's grandmother.
Why won't you allow these kids to go?
I'll tell you why. I know that river.
I lost 3 family in that river. They sink down like quarry rocks. When they come up, they's all swelled up like toady fish. I've been living on Yamacraw all these many years, and I ain't gonna lose no grands to that river.
Nothing is gonna happen to them. I'll protect them with my life.
You young! You don't know that river. That river can eat a man.
I got Zeke Skinberry's boat, and there ain't a man around who knows the river better than Zeke.
The grandmother stops washing greens.
Why you want my little ones at your big fancy white wedding anyhow?
Because these kids need as much mainland experience as they can get before they cross over. And besides, I think they're going to have fun. You know, I know they're going to have fun.
Fun, huh? Well, I just bet you know something about that.
As she focuses on the collard greens, Conroy turns and heads for the door. The grandmother glances at him.
Miss Brown never come visit me one time. Not about Saul, not about nothing. Old Lady Glover, she never come neither, but that's on account of she figured I'd fetch old Betsy out of the house and chase her off.
Mrs. Graves, I'm going to take care of your grandchildren. I give you my word.
Hands on her hips, Mrs. Graves walks up to the teacher, looking him in the eye. As she studies him, her frown softens. Now, on the mainland, Zeke drives a pickup through the city. Conroy's students ride in the open bed. Wearing their Sunday best clothes, they gape and point at the buildings they pass. One building towers 7 stories above them. Other facades feature fancy columns and lofty porticos. The boys wear jackets over white shirts and ties, and the girls wear coats over their dresses. Saul peers intently over his shoulder. Ethel holds her hat as she peers upward. Now, behind a minister and altar, an ornate stained glass window glows above handsomely carved wood paneling. The pews of the sanctuary stand decorated with violet bows. The wedding guests turn their heads as Conroy ushers his awestruck class down the aisle. Seated in one pew, Zeke and Ida smile at Conroy and the children. The kids file into a pew on the bride's side.
All right, everybody sit down. Everybody take off your coats, okay?
Mr. Conroy, I got a question.
All right, I need everybody quiet, okay? In a second, the prettiest girl in the world's going to be walking down here, okay? I want you to be good. You guys look great.
In the next pew up, Jenny beams in a fancy pink dress.
You look beautiful today, baby.
Now, Conroy takes his place beside the minister. At Ida's prompting, he tightens his tie. Jenny swivels in her pew and looks over her shoulder at Ethel.
What's your name?
Ethel.
My name's Jenny.
Oh, you that Jenny.
The girls grin.
How come you here?
Oh,
he's my new daddy.
Now, Barbara walks down the aisle in a white gown, holding a bouquet of pink roses. The guests rise and face her. Conroy motions to his students to stand, too. They stand on the pew and peer over the heads of the tall grown-ups. The bride meets the groom's gaze, and they trade broad smiles. As Barbara walks to the altar, she hands her bouquet to Jenny, who proudly holds it up. Cindy Lou peers at the flowers. As the grown-ups sit, Mary and the Yamacraw boys hop off the pew and sit, too. Now, the minister opens his Bible.
I do. Do you, Barbara, take Pat to have and to hold from this day forward, in sickness and in health, in prosperity and adversity, for as long as you both shall live?
I do.
By the laws vested in me, I now pronounce you man and wife. You may kiss the bride.
As Conroy kisses Barbara, the kids jump to their feet. Zeke and Ida both smile, stand, and applaud. As Conroy and Barbara grin at the Yamacraw kids, the other guests stand and clap too. Conroy kisses his wife again. Jenny walks down the aisle with the bouquet, leading the bride and groom and glancing back. Walking arm in arm, Conroy and Barbara eye the guests, touch their foreheads to each other, and smile happily. Now, the river reflects Yamacraw's densely wooded shoreline. Now, in her office, Mrs. Brown sits with a cup of tea on her desk as she punches the keys on her typewriter. She eyes the words on the paper carefully, takes a sip of tea, and continues with a serious expression. She moves the carriage and mouths words as she composes her phrases. Now, on the river, a hazy mist floats amid the trees. In his boat, Conroy lifts his hand from the metal wheel and blows on his fingers. Wearing a heavy coat over his thick turtleneck sweater, he steers his boat past tall reeds, gliding among the lily pads that cover the still water. Later, Conroy's boat motors toward the Yamacraw dock. As falling leaves drift downward near the open-air boathouse, Conroy turns off the motor and steps toward the bow. Conroy reaches for a dock post, pulls the boat to, and ties it off. Rubbing his hands, Conroy heads down the weathered dock. He stops, turns back, and retrieves a bag from the boat. He slings it over his shoulder, rubs his hands together in the cold, and blows into them again. Conroy follows the dock ashore, then later approaches Ted and Lou's house. Behind its cracked open door, Ted peeks out. Conroy bounces up the steps and lifts his fist to knock. As Ted swings the door open, Conroy bridles away from his stern frown.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. I'm a little late for school, so maybe give me a ride?
You a Nazi?
No?
Heard you drive one of them little Nazi cars.
No,
I killed a bunch of Nazis. I'd kill more if I could.
Ted glares at Conroy, then shuts the door in his face. Later, in his classroom, he faces the kids.
Give me a word to start with a D.
Door, day, devil.
Duh.
All right, it's Prophet's turn again. Go ahead, bud.
Dog.
Dog, yeah, that's a good one. Now go ahead and spell it.
D-O-D.
Charles and the others tense up. Now Conroy beckons to Mrs. Brown, who holds her leather strap as she faces a student.
Okay, go on and sit down. I repeat, do not write in these textbooks. I'm going to talk to Mr. Conroy.
Mrs. Brown peers into the hallway.
Mrs. Brown, do you not like these people? Do you have something against them?
You are talking crazy.
You know, hitting them the way that you do does not make them smarter. It doesn't encourage them to learn.
Exiting her classroom, Mrs. Brown beckons Conroy down the hall and frowns at him.
If anything, it makes them fear school. And it probably even makes them avoid and ignore everything you're trying to teach them.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Maybe not. Maybe I'm just guessing. But one thing I do know is that you don't listen.
Is that what you think? You don't control those children. You can't teach them. What you do is entertain them. Say, hey, get rowdy. And you say, all right, gang, break it up, break it up. Enough's enough. I hear you. I hear you all day long, Pat Conroy.
She leaves him standing in the hall. Now, alone in the schoolyard, Conroy shoots baskets. As he dribbles and pops in jump shots, Mrs. Brown watches through the window.
Basketball training had given me a sense for the opposition strategy. And I was starting to get a feeling Mrs. Brown might have put a defensive play in motion when it suddenly revealed itself.
Ted's Jeep parks abruptly, jostling Bennington in the passenger seat. Mrs. Brown watches from behind the school's front door. The deputy superintendent gets out and marches toward her, brushing purposefully past Conroy.
Inside, Mr. Conroy.
Mr. Bennington, what a surprise.
Always a pleasure to see you, Esther.
Now, in Mrs. Brown's office.
Your recent tardiness, Mr. Conroy, has been duly noted. Then there's the matter of this gas bill that you submitted for reimbursement. I'm sure you don't expect our schools to pay for the gas that you use to get to work.
Yeah, I do.
But we don't pay for the other teachers to get to work.
Well, how many of them take boats?
Our county has no commuting allowance. Now, you were aware of that when we hired you on staff.
Since then, I got married.
We'll pay for your gas on Monday and Friday. Any other boat trips are considered recreational, which we expect you to bear the expense.
Let me get this straight. So you think marriage is recreational, and being a responsible father, now that's a sport?
That's not the point, Mr. Conroy.
It sure as heck is the point. That's exactly the point.
Conroy, please, do not fly off the handle.
Mrs. Brown, do you think I'm flying off the handle?
Mrs. Brown eyes them both warily.
I mean, as the principal of this school, you must have an opinion on my situation.
Well, Mrs. Brown has nothing to do with it.
Conroy keeps his eyes on Mrs. Brown.
Colleague to colleague. You think this is fair?
Mrs. Brown eyes him nervously. Conroy picks up Bennington's Panama hat and plays with it. Bennington snatches it back.
It's Piedmont who's behind this, right?
Yeah, because my jurisdiction.
Yeah, right, sure.
Yeah, I am responsible for your position here.
Conroy heads for the door.
Yeah, well, guy's got to do what a guy's got to do.
You can't just walk away. Where do you think you're going?
Conroy faces Bennington.
Well, see, I was told to follow a chain of command. Not to stop on the weakest link.
He heads off.
How dare you? Do you take one more step and I swear...
You know what? Well, are you going to fire me?
Bennington withdraws his pointed finger.
Do you really think you have the authority to do that?
Mrs. Brown frowns.
It's late. I'm going home.
Bennington jumps to his feet.
Hold on, Conroy!
Conroy stops in the hallway and walks back into the office.
Perhaps...
Bennington bobs his head.
We can work something out here.
Conroy smiles.
Democracy. Gotta love it.
Mrs. Brown averts her gaze. Now, in Conroy's classroom, the teacher turns a radio's knobs.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Liftoff! Yeah! Right! Come on, let's hear it for the scientists, and for Gordon, and for Conrad, and for Bean, huh? How about that, gang? Three brave astronauts have just gone to the moon.
Did I go to the moon?
What? Well, yeah, Frank, you just heard him blast off.
Mr. Conroy, ain't going to no moon.
Conroy eyes their skeptical looks.
Well, gang, who else here doesn't think the Apollo's going to the moon?
I don't think they're going to the moon.
As the other kids raise their hands, Ethel puts hers up.
And Ethel, you too?
You say good, we question authority.
Well, yeah, but I didn't mean me.
Now, at home.
Who's ever going to make it on the mainland if they don't think man walked on the moon?
I know plenty of places in this country where they'd be right at home.
Well, darling, that's the point of education, right? That they don't end up in those places.
Barbara folds laundry and watches Jenny draw.
Man, if they could ever see the real thing.
We'll take them to D.C.
Oh, yeah, right. Mrs. Brown would be totally into that.
Conroy eyes photos of lunar exploration. His gaze shifts to the TV. Now, on the schoolyard, the boys in Conroy's class play basketball.
Oh, a big right hook from Frank the Hooker.
Lincoln falls. Lincoln grabs the ball.
Lincoln the Dirty comes up with it.
Lincoln scores. Oscar spins the ball in his forefinger.
The spinner. Stolen by Saul the Small.
Oh! My name, my guy.
My man, you be Charles the Cool.
Charles the Cool.
Charles shoots a layup. Mrs. Brown watches.
Who you be?
Me?
Yeah, you.
I be Pat the Rat.
Conroy lightly bounces the ball off Lincoln's forehead and lifts it high. Inside, Mrs. Brown watches with guarded interest. The kids swarm Conroy, grab for the ball, and bring him down. As Conroy rolls under the pig pile, Mrs. Brown twitches her nose and leaves the window. Now, on the mainland, Conroy's yellow Volkswagen parks in a residential driveway. Later, near a parked Edsel, Conroy joins Bennington for breakfast.
Mr. Bennington, I have a real chance to reach these kids.
Coffee?
No, thank you. This is a chance to expand their horizons.
How about some melon?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
It's delicious.
No, thank you, really. By taking these kids into Washington, D.C.,
Mr. Conroy, I think it's a wonderful idea. Now, if you are prepared to shoulder all responsibility, guarantee that there is absolutely no cost to the county, you have our full and unwavering support.
Conroy stares back bemusedly. Now, a small river separates golden fields. On a highway bridge over it, Conroy's Volkswagen drives second amid four traveling cars. Prophet rides beside the teacher. In back, Charles leans over the seat and Oscar gazes out the window. Oscar watches the highway's painted divider lines whizzing by.
What the more lines for?
What lines?
Them lines. Them lines all over the road.
All right. Those lines are divider lines. They tell the driver which side of the road he can stay on. Now, you see, if they're dotted, it means he can pass another car. And if it's a double line, it means he can't pass.
Does them lines say all that?
Yeah. Just some lines say all that.
The boys gaze at the road. Da, 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 da. Now, stalled in traffic, the kids in Barbara's car eye the towering obelisk of the Washington Monument.
Lincoln.
Yep.
Those buildings be straight in the sky. Ain't never seen nothing like that.
Oh, boy. How many cars going?
Now, in the National Air and Space Museum, a tour guide in a spacesuit leads the class through a lunar exploration exhibit. The boys and girls point at the walls decorated with glossy, illuminated images of craters and outer space.
You got that? You got that? Oh, look at that. It's spinning.
I said Earth, Prophet.
What's that?
I said a picture of the Earth from them.
Yeah, Earth.
What do you think, Oscar, huh?
It's wicked.
A gray slab bears a replica of Armstrong's footprint.
Neat, huh? Pictures are amazing.
It's like Cinderella. We got found. Sure it is. Miss Conroy, you try it.
Conroy takes a turn stepping on the footprint and sways like a moonwalker. Charles hugs him. Now, on the circular ledge of an esplanade's fountain, a long-haired man plays a guitar for two women wearing sunglasses. The kids run past them to a souvenir stand, where they load up on red, white, and blue trinkets, American flags, and Uncle Sam-style hats.
Can I take everybody's picture?
As the kids pose for Barbara, the hippie guitarist and his two lady friends join the shot. Now, projected on a screen, a slide of their smiling faces shifts to Charles, Lincoln, and Prophet at the Lincoln Memorial. In Mrs. Graves' living room, the Yamacroft families watch the evening slideshow with delighted smiles. Men rock with glee as images of their children appear. One slide of a girl comes up sideways. Conroy shrugs, working the projector, then smiles at a happy Mrs. Graves and her merry friends. Conroy looks over at Mrs. Graves seated nearby. She gazes thoughtfully at Conroy with a tranquil smile and takes a deep, satisfied breath. She purses her lips, stifling emotion. Conroy smiles, then looks downward pensively. Daytime. Sunlight twinkles on rolling waves. The frothy surf breaks on the beach as Conroy jogs across the sand. Wearing a t-shirt and sweats, he slows to a stop and scans the shoreline with a smile.
Springtime came to Yamacraw with more bold promise than I'd experienced in some time. My spirit was uplifted, and my hopes were high for the children as graduation day approached.
Now, at an outdoor ceremony.
Great honor today to introduce the best friend Yamacraw ever had, Mr. Ezra Bennington.
Bennington stands in his rumpled linen suit. Conroy applauds politely with his well-dressed students. As Bennington stumbles clumsily, taking the podium, Ted Stone stifles a smile. Mrs. Brown sits attentively.
Boys and girls, good parents of Yamacraw, I just want to say...
As Oscar sports with Conroy, Mrs. Brown watches.
Yamacraw is as fine a school as any in this country, despite what some people might say. Now, sure, we got a few problems here. You show me a school in this country that doesn't have problems, I'll show you a car without others.
Mrs. Brown forces a laugh.
I remember when I first came here, we had a plethora of problems, didn't we? Didn't we? Well, I remember when I had to put in that electricity there, didn't I? Remember that? And the air conditioning.
Mrs. Brown eyes Conroy's students. Two girls listen intently, their hands folded on their laps. Conroy warmly pats a boy's knee then makes a friendly shushing motion to Oscar. As Mary whispers in Conroy's ear, Ethel affectionately grabs his other shoulder. Mrs. Brown returns her attention to the podium. Glancing again to Conroy, she sees him surrounded by more eager promptings. She redirects her composed gaze to the podium, then her eyes shift deep in thought. Bennington hands off a certificate and shakes a boy's hand. Mary and Ethel hug. As the gathered adults give a standing ovation, a rotund woman hugs Ted. Now, Conroy steps up onto the platform with his middle grade graduates.
You all passed the state requirements fair and square. Huh? I want you guys to know how proud I am of you. All right? Congratulations. Okay, everybody. One last piece of business. With the consent of all you parents, Barbara and I would like to invite you all to our house across the river for a graduation party.
As the kids and parents cheer, Bennington and Mrs. Brown trade concerned glances.
Everybody can come to Zeke Rock's big boat.
Now, at Conroy's house, two of his students join their classmates at a piano. Bennington looks away from them.
Zeke?
Hello, Mr. Bennington.
Bob! Mrs. Brown enters the room carrying a plate. She eyes the children gathered around a white-haired pianist.
Beethoven!
She faces Conroy.
Congratulations, Mr. Conroy.
Thank you, Mrs. Brown.
Her eyes shift uncomfortably.
Your pecan pie is delicious.
As she steps away, Barbara approaches. She glances back at Mrs. Brown, then shoots a sporting smirk to Conroy. He smiles.
May I have a word with you, please?
Yeah, sure.
Conroy follows Bennington into a hallway.
What do you mean, consider other options?
Well, Mr. Conroy, it means that next year, your services will no longer be required at Yamacraw.
So, in other words, I'm fired?
Well, let's just put it this way. You are expendable. Lovely party. Thank you. And my regards to your wife.
Wearing a smug smile, he walks away. Conroy looks toward his students, then stares ahead with a pinched brow. Now, wearing jeans and a short-sleeved shirt, Conroy strides down a sunny hallway. In Piedmont's office.
Could you please explain to me why I'm being fired?
Because you have been consistently late. And it is against the rule for teachers to be late. No exception. And you, young man, you've been trying to make an exception of yourself all year.
So you'd fire me for getting lost in the fog a couple times?
If you didn't commute, you wouldn't be lost. And if you weren't lost, you wouldn't be late.
So this is about my commuting?
No, it's about your entire attitude. It's about your ignoring the chain of command.
I've followed your blessed chain of command link by link. That's why I'm here.
You endangered the lives of those young children by taking them on a wild ride to Washington.
Bennington gave his approval.
Well, if he did, he exceeded his authority.
He set me up for this.
I will not pay for gas. I will not tolerate your lateness, and I will not tolerate your willful neglect of my authority. You are hereby dismissed from Yamacraw, sir.
Conroy's father appears behind his shoulder.
What is the matter with you, boy? You're going to let yourself be dishonored by some bow-tie gas bag? Never took hold of nothing rougher than a golf club. Don't you know A. Conroy never backs down? A. Conroy takes crap from no man.
Is there anything else?
You know, Dr.
Conroy licks his lips.
Dr. Piedmont, you leave me no choice but to take my cause to the Board of Education.
Your cause? Your cause, sir.
Piedmont opens his door.
You go right ahead.
Well, I'm not worried. Not a little bit. Heck, I was told that Beaumont has the most democratic school system in the whole country.
At home, Conroy plays chutes and ladders with Jenny.
Oh, no! Your turn. You know they're going to load my record with, well, I don't know what. But whatever it is, they're going to make sure I never teach again.
Well, can I ask you something? You sure this is about you righting a wrong, or is it you picking a fight?
Listen, this is how I was raised. You fight or you fold. You win or you die. There's no middle ground. It's the Conroy way.
But are you sure it's your way?
I'm dead sure.
Is that you talking or your father?
Avoiding her gaze, Conroy flicks the game spinner.
You're too good for them, Pat. In this case, there is a middle ground. You can choose to walk away. You've got the parents on track. They can take it from here. You know that, right?
I can't go down. Not like this.
Your move, Daddy.
Conroy looks at Barbara and happily mouths, Daddy? She nods and then gives her daughter a wink.
Thank you, sweetie.
Nighttime. Outside, Piedmont and Bennington greet men in suits.
It came to pass there was a meeting of the Beaumont County School Board. The regulars showed up right on time. And so did the irregulars.
A rusty old pickup pulls into the nearby parking lot, loaded with Yamacraw parents. Zeke and Mrs. Graves watch the superintendent.
The one, ain't he? The one over there with Bennington.
Yes, ma'am, that's him.
I should have brought my Betsy out of that house all loaded up. Dropped that man down where he should have been.
Can't go around killing folks in buckshot, Dad. The whole world ain't like Yamacraw.
Pity.
Now, inside a meeting room, Piedmont shakes hands with each of the board members. Seated in the front row, Conroy watches as Barbara rubs his arm.
You wear that same tie? You wear that tie? Every single time I see you, I owe you $5. I promise that. It's a great
book. Turning away from the board, Piedmont eyes Conroy and his wife. Behind him, Mrs. Brown walks down an aisle. As she passes the Yamacraw parents, Mrs. Graves pats the woman beside her. They glare at the principal. As Piedmont takes his seat, he nods to the chairman, who lifts a gavel.
On the matter regarding Mr. Conroy's service on Yamacraw Island, the school board has reviewed Mr. Conroy's record of insubordination, gross neglect of duty, and conduct unbecoming a professional educator.
Oh, hold on now. Hold on.
Any more of that ruckus and we'll clear the room.
As Barbara stifles a smile, Conroy stands.
Sir, may I speak to my record?
The chairman looks to Piedmont, who nods.
Make it brief.
Gross neglect of duty, conduct unbecoming, these all sound like very serious charges. Charges that could easily find their way into a court of law.
Sonny boy.
Piedmont stands.
Are you threatening this fine board with a lawsuit? Is that what you're doing?
Dr. Piedmont, this is my time.
Dr. Piedmont has the floor.
No, he doesn't.
Barbara pulls her husband into a seat.
What you're getting here is just a little taste of this young man's obstreperous nature. Now, this is a young man who thinks he can take children on a field trip to our nation's capital without proper authorization.
I had proper authorization.
Conroy stands and points at Bennington.
The Beaumont School Board rules to uphold its decision to terminate employment.
Mr. Chairman.
Everyone looks back as Mrs. Brown stands. Conroy's eyes widen. Piedmont glances questioningly to Bennington, who shrugs.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I only want...
Keeping his eyes on her, Conroy lifts his chin a little.
I just want to say...
Go on, Mrs. Brown. We don't have all night.
Yes, sir. Just want to say that, personally, as a colleague of Mr. Conroy, I find your decision...
As Piedmont watches her, his brow furrows.
Unfair.
Conroy tears up and his lips tighten. Mrs. Graves shifts and listens intently. As Mrs. Brown lets out a shaky breath, the chairman lifts his gavel.
Thank you, Mrs. Brown. This meeting is adjourned.
Now... On Yamacraw Island, Conroy walks with Mrs. Graves.
The one thing to do, we're going to get all the folks, kids too, everybody on Yamacraw go mark his name. If they don't bring y'all back, they're going to strike the school.
Edna, I don't know.
Ain't for you to know. Time for us to know. Time for Piedmont to know. Mr. Big Boss Superintendent. You ain't off the hot stove yet.
Now, islanders march toward the river. One girl carries a handwritten sign, Keep Conroy. Others hold a large banner that reads, Strike Yamacraw School. Mrs. Graves approaches a man leading the protesters.
You sign this here petition. Here, make your best mark.
Ted and Lou eye the group warily as it reaches the dock. Now, led by Mrs. Graves, they march out onto the platform. They look toward the river as Zeke's boat draws close. The parents angrily pump their fists. On the boat, Piedmont stands up beside Bennington and lifts a pair of binoculars to his eyes. At the wheel, Zeke grins.
What do they think they're doing?
Sticking to what, looks like. Conroy doesn't get reinstated, they're going to strike the school.
As Piedmont eyes him, Bennington lowers his head.
I'll find out.
Piedmont looks toward the dock through the binoculars as Bennington steps over to Zeke. The fisherman hands Bennington a bullhorn, then turns the boat for the administrators to face the crowd.
All right, everybody, calm down. Calm down now, come on now. Listen to me, give me that.
Zeke smirks as Piedmont forcibly takes the bullhorn from Bennington.
Hey, give it back.
My district.
Listen up, people. Calm down now, come on, calm down. Now you listen to me. If you people strike the school and do not allow your children to attend class this fall, you are going to be breaking the compulsory attendance law.
Zeke grins, then quickly stifles it.
You are going to be facing a fine of $50 per day.
The parents wave angrily.
Listen now, listen.
Piedmont read them the riot act through a bullhorn. The folks of Yamacraw read it right back, with no need to amplify their voice.
Look now, look, I've got the most democratic school system in this country.
This our school. Ain't no mainland school. We teach our children be our business. Ain't nothing to do with no big boss superintendent.
Get out. Come on, get out.
Zeke loses his smile and directs the boat away from the Yamacraw dock. The parents applaud and hug each other. As the boat grows distant, Bennington looks back at them, and Piedmont takes a seat. Mrs. Graves glares defiantly, her chin trembling slightly. Nighttime. At the Conroys, Barbara enters the hall and finds her husband sitting on a bottom step.
Let me guess what you're thinking. Conroy never backs down. A Conroy takes crap from no man. But...
she sits beside him.
You're not him. You're you. A loser teacher who can't hold a job because he loves kids too much.
I love you. Did I ever tell you that?
She rests her head on his shoulder.
Not nearly enough.
As she reaches around him, Conroy rubs her arm. She lifts her head and smiles at him. Now, outside the schoolhouse, a swing hanging from a tall tree branch sways back and forth. In his classroom, Conroy stands at his desk and packs papers in his bag. Opening a drawer, he finds one of his hand puppets. He smiles at it, then shows it to the empty desks before him. Pressing his lips together, he sets it down, then shoulders his bag. As he steps out from behind his desk, he remembers Charles.
You ever seen a snake, Milton Cal?
Cindy Lou grins in her seat.
Come over the hot fire, and then the fur. All these sunny swims right up.
He's still ugly.
Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Gates open!
Conroy stares off wistfully, remembering Ethel.
You say good, we question authority.
His tight lips form a smile. He shifts his gaze around the room, then straightens. Conroy lifts a stack of albums off a child's desk and the record player case from the seat. Taking a few more steps toward the door, he smiles and lifts the copy of How to Teach Primary School off a table. Staring at the book, he crosses to Mrs. Brown's open door and knocks on the frame. She looks up from a filing cabinet.
Miss Conroy.
He steps further into the room and faces Mrs. Brown.
I appreciate what you said at the meeting. I know that wasn't easy.
He holds his hand out for a shake. Mrs. Brown takes it and hesitantly looks him in the eye. Smiling, Conroy takes the book from under his arm.
You might enjoy this. It really helped me.
Mrs. Brown eyes it, then gives the young teacher a sidelong glance.
So long, Mrs. Brown.
Conroy walks away. Mrs. Brown watches him go, then looks down at the book on her desk. She touches the faded yellow cover by the words, "How to Teach Primary School," and lifts it up. Setting her jaw stubbornly, she glances toward the window. She looks back at the book in her hands. Her eyes dart across the pages, then lift pensively. Now, women work at the brick fire pit under an open shelter. As Conroy passes, two men cross in the opposite direction.
Hey, you have a good summer now, all right? Won't miss them shrimp.
On his way toward the dock, he faces a group of parents and students waiting on the steps of the post office. Mrs. Graves approaches.
We got this here petition signed, just like I said. Every parent on the island signed it. Now we're going to take it down to the next board meeting and...
Deliver the news!
Mrs. Graves casts an annoyed glance at Lincoln, then faces Conroy again, smiling. He looks over the petition.
This is very well written.
He glances up at Ethel, who smiles proudly. Mrs. Graves smiles too.
They'd be impressed. I know that I am. But I don't want you to do it. In the end, it's these kids who are going to end up losing.
They lose if you don't teach them.
We don't want our children hit no more. It ain't right.
I think that maybe Mrs. Brown has started to see the light on that. And besides, there are plenty of other teachers. Most of them way smarter than me.
You smart?
Smart. Hold on. Please. Maybe y'all can't see it yet, but you've already won. That school is yours now. You stood your ground, and they got the message that you're in charge of your children's education. All you have to do now is stay involved. Always.
He focuses on Mrs. Graves. Licking his lips, he looks to the others.
And never back down.
Some of the parents nod. Conroy faces Mrs. Graves again.
Never back down.
She looks down and thoughtfully purses her lips. Lifting her chin, she eyes Conroy. He smiles and heads for the dock.
No, don't leave! No, no, no.
Ethel's eyes filled with tears.
Conroy!
Mrs. Graves follows
him. What about you? What are you going to do?
I got this little girl who just started calling me Daddy. I'm going to be sure it sticks that way.
The children gather at the top of the hill and watch them.
Y'all look out for yourselves.
He takes care of our own.
Reaching the dock, Conroy pulls Mrs. Graves into a hug.
Edna, you are a magnificent creature. Oh. You're a queen. Safe.
Oh, all right, all right. Go on.
With an impatient frown, she pushes him off. They smile fondly at each other. Conroy's lips tighten as he stares into the woman's sharp eyes. He turns and heads down the dock to his small boat. As he passes a tree, he reaches out and his fingertips brush the bark. Two fishermen at the end of the dock smile at him as he sets his belongings into the boat. Up the path, Ted and Lou join the kids. They all watch Conroy step aboard his small wooden craft and push off. As he starts the engine and pushes the throttle forward, Mrs. Graves watches.
Oh, well.
With a misty-eyed smile, she waves goodbye. Smoke wafts from the boat's motor as Conroy steers it alongside the shore. His students hurry down a wooded slope toward the river. Conroy notices them and smiles. As they race along the shore, Prophet grins.
Superman,
what
state we at?
South Carolina.
State capital name?
Columbia.
Got the planet to the sun.
Mercury.
Ethel steps into a rowboat on the riverbank.
One time a man say, we got a question of rules. And a law. And not believe a thing just because the big chief says so.
Ralph Waldo Emerson,
Lowering her hands from her mouth, Ethel smiles and keeps her contented look on her teacher.
I wondered then, as I do now, whose life got changed more? Was it theirs or mine? Kids, parents, the island, me. I knew nothing would ever be the same. It shouldn't be. The river was rising with the tide. The tide was rising in the country. The water was wide. I wished my students a safe crossing.